Hello and welcome to the Blockade Runner podcast number 257. My name is John. Joining me again is Ryan. What's up, Ryan?
We're back.
We are back. Yeah, back and badder than ever, like Wat Tambor. It's been a long time, Ryan.
It has.
It's been a real long time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, we got to try to remember how to do this. I feel a little rusty. Not totally sure I know how to do this anymore, but I'm gonna give it my best shot tonight. We of course took most of the summer and fall off from doing the podcast because there was this big strike going on, and we were trying not to step on anyone's toes as far as that goes. Be supportive and not cross that figurative picket line, so to speak. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. We did one episode, which we thought would be okay to do, talking to Chris Baker about his Star Wars video game retrospective book. But like really since, God, I don't know what, June or July, we've just done that one episode. So it's been almost half of a year off.
So it goes.
So it goes. Okay. All right. Yeah. So we're back, and we're back just a few days before Christmas here, and just a few days before the end of 2023. And you know, we're gonna do a little bit of a holiday focused episode tonight because we both just watched the documentary A Disturbance in the Force, a documentary about the Star Wars holiday special. So we figured that'd be a good occasion to come back and do maybe one last episode here in 2023, and perhaps at the end of the show we'll talk about some resolutions for 2024. By which I just mean like maybe some plans for some very tentative plans for 2024. So, but yeah, we'll go ahead and jump into the Star Wars holiday special. Not the holiday special itself, A Disturbance in the Force, the documentary about that holiday special. I'm wearing, I don't know if you can tell, Ryan, but I'm wearing a very holiday special themed or Star Wars holidays themed outfit here. I'm wearing my like Star Wars holiday sweater, which you can kind of see if you're watching the video. I mean, it looks pretty fresh, right? And I'm also wearing a Boba Fett, the cartoon from the holiday special, the Nelvana cartoon. I'm wearing a t-shirt featuring that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I haven't seen that before. That's cool.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, yeah. What Star Wars holiday special inspired gear are you wearing tonight, Ryan?
I am wearing my written and directed by Ryan Johnson shirt.
Okay, nice. Okay, sweet. I don't think I knew you had that. It looks like it's like, is it a play on Scream? The movie Scream?
Yeah,
is that what's going on there?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's from the, I guess, what is it? Scream 5, Scream Reboot, Just Scream, Scream 2019, I don't know, whatever. But yeah, there's the whole Rian Johnson Knives Out guy.
Talking about that was the one where they were talking about requels, right? A requel.
Yeah,
that was cool for a minute there when Scream was back and Scream was cool and not being totally shitty. Remember that?
Yep, it was an exciting year.
Okay, all right, well, let's go ahead and get into discussing A Disturbance in the Force. Mm-hmm. The Star Wars Holiday Special documentary. Ryan, you bought the Blu-ray, right?
I did. Yep.
Yeah. I bought the Blu-ray too, but then I ended up having to watch it on streaming. So I have not watched the Blu-ray yet. And I know there's some bonus features and stuff on there. So I'm excited to check that out, but I've not been able to yet.
I didn't dig into any of the bonus stuff on there. I just watched the documentary. So I can't speak to it.
Yeah, I mean, I assume there's bonus stuff on there anyway.
I'm trying to think, because it seemed pretty bare bones.
Okay.
Just going by the menu, but I mean, I also didn't really search around. Hit play.
Yeah. Well, the documentary is available to stream all over the place. It's $5 to rent. on like Amazon and Apple TV. I rented it on Apple TV. All those places you can rent it there. You can buy it for $10 on Apple TV, so that's a pretty good deal. Or the Blu-rays, maybe I think around $25 or so.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and I missed out on the opportunity actually to see it at Alamo. There's an Alamo in Wrigleyville in Chicago now, and
I didn't know that.
So, and it was playing there a couple times, but it sold out right away, or it sold out before I knew about it. So, all the screenings were sold out. So,
yeah. I didn't even know it existed until, like, I think I found out that it existed on social media or something, and then like the next, like within like a couple days, you sent a picture to our Star Wars group chat of like you holding the Blu-ray, and I was like, oh, this is a thing you can buy. So I just ordered it right away.
Yeah, right on. So let's just talk about kind of impressions overall here, and then we can get into some of the more interesting moments, I suppose. But how did you find the documentary overall, Ryan?
I think for people like us, there's not a ton of new ground tread in this documentary. We all kind of know that, you know, the holiday special is infamous, it's goofy, it's kind of hard to watch, but also has, like, some cool stuff, some, you know, meme-y stuff to it. We know, like, a little bit about the context it was produced in. So there wasn't, like, a ton of, like, huge revelations in this for me, but what makes this documentary really good is it contextualizes the holiday special really well, like the environment that allowed something like this to happen, and I think it approaches it like in a very sequential way that really does kind of tell the full story, and there is also just a lot of really good interview subjects that can give like firsthand accounts of it. So I think that's probably the biggest strength of this documentary is the way it, you know, explains and contextualizes the holiday special.
Yeah, that is well said. I totally agree. There was a few moments where I was watching it and I was thinking like, you know, this is really well put together and it's good material for sure. But kind of in the beginning, especially when it was sort of setting up like 1977 and 1978 and, you know, Charlie Lippincott's going to conventions and marketing the movie this way and stuff like that. It was like, well told and important information for sure. But part of me was thinking like, well, I do see this in like a lot of Star Wars documentaries where like, you know, this is very well tread ground and I'm very familiar with it. But I think it needs to be in there, you know, because hopefully a lot of people will watch the documentary that are not as familiar with that stuff, and it should be in there. And they did a good job of retelling that. No, I'm 100% with you. I was most fascinated by the documentary when they were talking or when they were focused on variety shows and, you know, the context of what was television like in the 1970s in America, because that is the environment that, you know, produced this really weird Star Wars holiday special, you know? And so... yeah, I agree. And so once it got into the process of, you know, started to focus on the process of the holiday special being put together and, you know, how Lucasfilm was involved and the other, producers and writers and stuff, you know, I was a little more engaged. And then, especially too, when they started to focus on specific segments and, that kind of stuff, like it was good. That was the deep dive I was looking for, you know, into the holiday special. Right. So, yeah, and as you said, there's some great interview subjects in there too, so yeah, it was it's really, really good. I highly recommend it for anyone listening to this podcast for sure. So
yeah, I was feeling like a little apprehensive when I first, like, when it first started, and you know, you have, you know, kind of the usual suspects of like who you would get to, who, like, who in Hollywood would you get to talk about the Star Wars Holiday Special? Like, you'd get like Seth Green and Kevin Smith and Patton Oswalt and like, you know, and a welcome addition was Weird Al, which made me very happy. But you're like, oh no, is this gonna be people just like talking about how it sucks and how, you know, everyone was like let down by it and like, what's the deal with this? And like, it kind of does that for a minute, but then it, like you were saying, like, it goes into like much more interesting territory and also like brings in people who were, you know, actually involved with the creation of it, who we don't really hear from, you know, very often in Star Wars, like, behind the scenes conversations.
Yeah, that's totally true. And actually, you know, one thing I really liked about it as well is that I feel like the people who tell the story of the Star Wars Holiday Special, you know, the people who get the voice of telling the story in this documentary are the writers and the people, for the most part, who seem to have some affection or some level of like pride isn't the right word, because like everybody's sort of like, yeah, it's not, you know, the most successful thing ever or what, you know what I mean? Like, nobody's like trying to present it as like this amazing achievement or anything, but you know, there's a world in which a documentary exists like this, that it is just people dunking on it, you know, for an hour and a half and being snarky. And, you know, that would not be interesting to me at all. And I really liked the earnestness and the honesty and the, like, defensiveness isn't the right word, but there were people who worked on this, who were telling this story, who wanted to, you know, express the positive things about like what this thing is and their experience making it. And, you know, like, I'm glad that it wasn't just, Hollywood comedians taking pot shots at it or people from Lucasfilm. I mean, they wouldn't do that, you know, but like people from Lucasfilm, George, for instance, you know, just talking about what a disaster it is, or, you know, it wasn't that kind of thing. It was definitely more, like I said, the people who made it, having a voice to kind of talk about how it happened and why it is the way it is and what they were trying to accomplish and what the challenges were that they faced, but also to look back on it with some fondness at and some positivity about their experience making it. So that all comes through, I think, and makes it a much more interesting and less predictable, you know, sort of like little entertainment documentary.
Yeah. And I think just to go back to, you know, what we've already mentioned a few times, the context is so key. And, you know, I think, you know, you and I, we weren't even born when the Holiday Special originally aired. So we definitely didn't, we weren't familiar with all like those sort of variety shows that predated it. I know, you know, in passing what like the Donnie and Marie show was, but like, I never, you know, I never watched that or anything. So, yeah. So I think like that history alone was like invaluable to me. Like, I was, you know, I was watching that part and I was like, oh, this would be cool to like show this section to like my mom, who doesn't like care about Star Wars at all, but, you know, knows those variety shows and who those, you know, different performers and actors and everyone is from that era. So yeah, I thought like that stuff was so good. And you know, I don't think anyone in the documentary or like, you know, the people behind it or anything was like really, you know, trying to make excuses for it. But I mean, they really did face a lot of challenges, within the production. You know, I think having, you know, like George being there at the beginning of it and having like a vision, and you know, they talk about like the people who made it, like they had one day with George Lucas, and you know, they spent 12 hours and talked through everything, and then from there, you know, he went off to work on Empire Strikes Back, and they were just kind of left to their own devices. And then suddenly, like, the, you know, the studio starts, you know, interfering, and then there's, like, you know, push and pull through various creative folks involved in it, with, like, their vision, and George is just gone at this point, and so they just, like, you know, have to make this thing happen one way or another. So it really does kind of explain like what, you know, why it is the way it is. And, you know, people on there, again, you have to think about like the time period and the context, because this was a time where, you know, and is still the case in Hollywood, that, you know, people, you don't always get to work on your like brilliant passion project. Sometimes you're just like working on something to pay the bills, and it needs to have like a quick turnaround. And you know, in this time period, this is before, you know, like what we call like prestige TV, like there were very few examples of like really high quality television programming at the time. Like that was the domain of the cinema, you know, and television was like a disposable thing that you didn't have to commit to, that, you know, would, I think they described it in there as like something like these kind of variety shows are something that would, you know, be watchable by the whole family, but not really please anyone.
Right. Like it's not designed for any one member of the family, right? It's not going to be like any one person's favorite thing, but it'll have enough in there for everybody that they'll all come together and watch it together. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the, you know, I guess the variety part of it.
Yeah. 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 Yeah, I think, like you said before, too, that context of just understanding a little more of what the world was like at that time, the television world was like at that time, is really valuable. And also, you know, they really went into how much Star Wars was kind of like all over the place at the time in terms of marketing. And so that's a huge factor, too, because it's like, you know, out of context, you look at this Star Wars holiday special and think like, oh, like who let this happen? It's crazy. It's such a disaster. It's so weird, you know, whatever. And it is kind of all those things. But, you know, when they show the clips of the Donnie and Marie show, and they show the clips of like the Burger Chef commercials and Mark Hamill showing up on the Bob Hope show and, you know, all this stuff that was going on, it's like, it was in some ways par for the course, you know, considering all the marketing stuff they were doing with Star Wars, with both the characters and the actors, you know? So.
Yeah. And it was, you know, it was like the second blockbuster of that era, after Jaws. And there was, you know,
Star Wars was the second blockbuster, yeah. You're saying, not this holiday special.
No.
Okay.
No.
Gotcha.
Star Wars was, and And there was like that question of like, you know, no one could have predicted it would become like the media empire that it's become. And there was like that chance of like, hey, this movie did really well. Everyone's talking about it until the next movie comes along, whatever the next Jaws or the next Star Wars is. It's certainly not going to be Star Wars 2. Like,
yeah.
And so it's like, yeah. And there was this talk of like the studio being like, people are going to forget about it if you don't have something like, if you don't have these people on TV all the time and all this. So it was, you know, it was still like the Wild West of blockbuster filmmaking.
Yeah. So speaking of it being like the Wild West, I need to track down whatever this, I need to check down whatever this Darth Vader meets the Wolfman thing is. Did you catch that?
Yeah, absolutely.
What is Darth Vader meets the Wolfman? I need to know.
Yeah.
I feel like that doesn't exist anywhere. If it was like a TV special or I don't know what it was, if it even ever happened, but that would have to be something we'd know about and would have seen and people would be talking about if it was like, if it existed, right?
I mean, I don't know. Is it on YouTube?
Yeah, I haven't looked yet, but that was something where I was like, oh, wow. Okay, well, that's learning about that, if it exists, is probably worth the price of the documentary right there, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah. But, yeah, I think, I guess, like, well, I want to kind of go back to the earlier portion of the documentary here, the earlier part of the narrative of this documentary, because one thing that I found... I'm glad they took the time to discuss, and I was interested to hear some of these voices talking about is how difficult it was to see this Star Wars Holiday Special, because as we know, it just aired the one time in 1978, I think Black Friday 1978. So if you didn't watch it that night, it was really, really difficult to track down. And, you know, I first heard about it probably in the late 90s or something, at which point there was, you know, plenty of like bootlegs of it floating around and stuff. I don't know when I first saw it. Probably around that time, somewhere. But point I'm trying to make, I guess, is like 1981, let's say 1984, you're a Star Wars fan. Like, I feel like it was more of a like a mythic thing that would be tough to actually get your hands on. And that is part of why it has this like reputation, this mystique, part of why I guess it's so, you know, a lot of people. I'll just say this, because I don't really like the Star Wars Holiday Special that much. Like, there's parts of it that I like a lot, but there's a lot of it that like is really kind of creeps me out or makes me feel really weird. And like, I don't know. I like to watch like little segments here and there, but the last time I tried to watch it from beginning to end, it was a major struggle. I have to say. So, but anyways, the fact that it was so difficult to find. Who was it? I can't remember who said it, but somebody said the Zapruder film was easier to find than the Holiday Special. The Zapruder film being like home video footage of the JFK assassination, you know? So like, it was one of those things where the absence of the Holiday Special, I think, is why it has such, you know, a huge reputation now. And they did devote some time to telling that story, which I found pretty interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. Just before we move on, I did look on YouTube. There is a video that was posted 5 days ago with 63 views of Darth Vader meets the Wolfman.
No way.
And it's Darth Vader stops by the Midnight Special while Wolfman Jack is hosting in 1977.
Okay. All right. Wolfman.
It's a Wolfman Jack's. It's just a minute long clip.
Okay. Gotcha. Gotcha.
Okay. That does exist, though.
All right. Interesting. I'll have to check that out. Okay. Cool.
I mean, so, I think all Wolfmans are good Wolfmans.
Yeah, but it's not like Abbott and Costello meet the Wolfman or something, you know?
No, it's not the Universal Monster.
Gotcha. Okay. Cool. Okay. Yeah, I don't know when the appropriate time to bring it up is, but well, first off, Gilbert Gottfried was like my favorite part of the documentary, I feel like.
He was on there. Yeah,
he was pretty funny. He was cracking me up for sure. In my notes, I wrote he was, and I underlined it, doing material. Like he's like, yeah. This is I'm gonna
he was
do
doing a bit.
Yeah, like, I'm gonna do.
He's yeah. like, this thing sucks so bad. Why wasn't I in it? It was a full on bit.
Yeah,
and, I respect that.
Yeah. So that was pretty funny, and I wrote his name down and wrote positive comments about him a few times in my notes about the. Mm-hmm. About the doc, so I enjoyed him.
Yeah.
For sure. But then yeah, too, another thing about it, which, you know, I guess like maybe we sort of vaguely knew, but is that after that initial meeting with George Lucas, you know, kind of being there and being involved in the creative process and all that, it was, you know, people who produced other variety shows who were the driving force behind, you know, creating this special. And it kind of makes a lot more sense when you look at it from that perspective. You know, it wasn't mm-hmm. like, wow, how did Lucasfilm screw this up so bad and make something so awful? It's really like Lucasfilm delivered, here's Star Wars, you know, put it into one of your variety shows.
Yeah.
But the people crafting it and creating it weren't Star Wars people. And so, you know, it feels like off-brand or, you know, unauthorized, like, you know what I mean? Like, it doesn't feel like Star Wars because it wasn't made by Lucasfilm. It wasn't really, it was just made by people who didn't have really any connection to it. And it's not like they came in really so much saying like, okay, I'm going to make a Star Wars now. It was like, we're going to do what we always do, but we're going to put some Star Wars dressing on it, you know, mm-hmm. some Star Wars, you know, the look and the characters and the costumes, but it's just going to be basically what we always kind of do with variety specials, I feel like.
And with a small amount of guidance from George Lucas.
Yeah.
Like he did really want the Chewbacca's family stuff in there, but probably not in the way that it turned out in the holiday special.
Yeah, there was some great editing in terms of, you know, the documentary, like the way they cut some of that stuff together for, I guess, comedic effect. Because, yeah, there's some really some wild moments with those Wookiees. But, you know, like on that topic, we did learn that George, it seems like George wrote his own 5-page treatment for a 1-hour version of this special. And that would have been, I feel like if that would have been produced, it would have been much closer to feeling like Star Wars people making a variety show instead of variety show people making a Star Wars thing, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Which, by the way, now when we get this kind of stuff, it's much more the former. It's like Star Wars and Lucasfilm making something in a different genre or making something in a different format rather than, you know, just letting, you know, somebody who has a different specialty come in and do a Star Wars thing. So like I'm thinking about like the Lego Star Wars holiday specials and stuff like that, you know, mm-hmm. They obviously are not like in the super traditional mold of Star Wars storytelling, but you can tell the people who are making it like love Star Wars. They get Star Wars. It's like, it's you're taking Star Wars and then you're making like a different form of it. Whereas like I said, I know I'm repeating myself now, but it really feels like from watching this documentary that what happened here was variety show people making a variety show and then sprinkling some Star Wars into it. And I just feel like that would never happen now. You know, if we were to get another Star Wars holiday special, it would be Star Wars first, you know, and it would be Lucasfilm, you know, directing it and driving it and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I still think there have been things that kind of walk the line between there. Because I think of, like, you know, I guess this is more of, like, like mid to late 2000s, which, you know, the late 2000s especially, like, Star Wars was in a very weird place pre-Disney, and you got stuff like the Family Guy Star Wars stuff and like Robot Chicken and those, and like, I don't know, those don't really feel like Lucasfilm handled work. I think they go a little too far in like the directions of like those, you know, those creations. Mm-hmm. Stuff now, like even, you know, like the little Simpson shorts that are on Disney Plus and stuff like that, it does feel like, and Star Wars Visions, I guess, would be like a really good example of this. Like, there is like a level of quality control where there's nothing happening that you're like, whoa, how did this slip by? Like, yeah, kind of thing.
Well, and those are produced by Lucasfilm, and they go out and they hire animation studios and directors and you know, whoever, to produce these shorts for them. But they're the ones, I mean, obviously they co-produce them with those studios and stuff, but like the process is like, we're going to find, you know, at 10 studios or whatever, and they're going to pitch to us, and we might accept their pitch or we might not accept their pitch, or, you know, and if we might accept their pitch, but then we're going to shift it or change it to make sure it fits into, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So it definitely feels like that quality control, for lack of a better term, is there. And, it's probably not even how they did it with Robot Chicken and stuff like that, you know, X number of years ago, but definitely I think that feels like what they're doing now. So, so yeah, that is a good example. And also, you know, one revelation for me, something I didn't know necessarily, is, you know, learning more about these story meetings with, Alan Dean Foster, you know, from the early 70s and or mid 70s, I guess. But, you know, after Star Wars was written, but before it came out, and George, you know, talking about Chewbacca's family and the Wookiee planet and all that kind of stuff, like in 1976, I think, you know, they're talking about some of these things that end up being part of the holiday special. I'd probably read something about that, I think, in the making of Star Wars. I assume that would have been in there. But yeah, I thought that was definitely pretty interesting, because like the Wookiee family, Mala and Lumpy and all that, is like one of the most, I don't know, it's certainly probably the most memorable part of the holiday special, but it's so ridiculous. You know what I mean? It's so, so ridiculous. Mm-hmm. And it, without that knowledge, it really would feel like, oh man, these people don't know anything about Star Wars, and they just came up with this goofy Wookiee family, and I'm sure they made it a lot goofier than it otherwise would have been, but like, it's straight right. from George, straight from George.
Yeah. Yeah. I think one thing that, you know, does get its due, and, you know, I kind of wish they would have went a little deeper on, is, you know, the shirt you're wearing, the animated section, where like, I would say it's probably the good standout part of the holiday special. It's like the quote unquote best part. It, you know, there's a lot of like memorable stuff in the holiday special, but like it's like the only thing that I think is memorable for like mostly good reasons. And I do like how, you know, there's all the way that it kind of leads up to discussing the animated part, where it's like, you know, in the documentary, it's talking about like the goofy Wookiee stuff and like grandpa watching VR porn and like for some reason, Jefferson Starship's here and, you know, B. Arthur. And then all of a sudden, then it's like, then there's this like pretty sweet animation section that like introduces Boba Fett, and it's like, you know, inspired by Mobius, and it's pretty good. And you know, it's the first Star Wars animation, and and all of the, you know, and then obviously the kind of lasting impact of that and the way, you know, Jon Favreau is a fan and, you know, incorporated stuff into Mandalorian that's like super iconic now. And yeah, I don't know. I think it was, you know, I wish they would have actually like went a little further into that, like telling more about like who are the artists, who is the animation studio that produced this? Like what had they done before? How did they, you know, get in contact? Like also like why is it kind of weird looking? Like you know, what was happening here? So, but I do like that the animation section was at least, given its due.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. I respect that short. I don't really enjoy it myself. Like it is not for me. I don't know. It's something about the look of it and just, it's so 70s. It's so, to me, it's like so aggressively 70s and like a really, I don't know, not a way that I'm super into, but I definitely gaudy. Think, yeah, but I think you're right that it's like, it's, and this is not an uncommon opinion, but I think it's like the most like objectively like quality, good, you know, component of the, it's the part that's not embarrassing, right? Like it's the part that's not goofy. It's the part that's, I mean, it's a little goofy. There's a big purple dinosaur and stuff, but you know, overall, I mean, it's, it is, yeah, definitely the most respectable part. But, you know, I'll take B. Arthur and is it Art Carney pouring? Was it Art Carney pouring those beers into his head for some reason? Like, you know, I'll take that over the Boba Fett cartoon any day, or the Bubba Fett cartoon, as Bruce Valanche pronounces Boba Fett. I noticed too.
Yeah. But, speaking of B. Arthur, something that was like fascinating about this is like how so many people showed up and were like, okay, I will do this Star Wars Holiday Special if I get to sing a song.
Yeah, Carrie like, Fisher too, right?
Yeah. Like, yeah. I don't know. I think there's something like just really endearing and of the era of that's like, that's the negotiation piece. It's not like, you know, I'm sure there's discussions of money and everything, but it's like mostly like, I want to be able to sing a song in this thing.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. Well, and she was like, B. Arthur, it sounded like, you know, she didn't really have any interest in the Star Wars part, but she had a lot of respect for the husband and wife team who were kind of leading the production and who wrote the song, you know, that she sang. And she seemed like, she, you know, looking back on it years later, she was pretty proud of the song, even though she didn't seem to care for the Star Wars, you know, kind of component of it. So, yeah. Yeah. Also, Robin Williams apparently was maybe going to be cast in this, or you know, but those producers were not interested. So that's certainly a missed opportunity. And Favreau too. I like the little clip they had of Dave Filoni talking to Favreau about Favreau, and they even had a clip of, actually they had the clip of Favreau talking to George. He's trying to pop George. He's trying to get
cringe,
trying to excite George, and George looks like,
so glad it's in there.
Yeah, George is like, not really. He's like, oh, it's canon, right? George is like, not really. And you could just, there's like this level of like, oh god, man, we were having such a good time until you, like, you know,
it's so awkward. It's like an awkward like fan at a convention stepping up to the microphone at a panel to ask like the worst question, and everyone's uncomfortable. And it's, I love how like that clip just is probably gonna haunt Jon Favreau for his entire life, but it was like in an official Lucasfilm thing, so
yeah. Yeah, in one of the behind the scenes documentaries or whatever, right? Probably. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome. Yep. you know, something else we have not talked about, which we certainly should have brought up by now, is the fact that the late great J.W. Rinzler is is featured in the documentary, and I was really happy to see him there. So I don't know if I had heard that he would be in it or not, but yeah, I was really excited that that he was part of it. So obviously they've been filming for this for quite a while.
Yeah,
you know, so but it was good to see him there, and he made a great point towards the end of the documentary, which was, I kind of mentioned earlier, but he pointed out that, like, at the time this aired, it was not necessarily this giant disaster that everybody was so embarrassed by, and, you know, it wasn't this, like, albatross around everybody's neck at the time, because, again, like you had brought up earlier, context is so important, and Rinzler, you know, makes that comment, made a comment about that too, where he said that any art, you have to have the context, and without that context, you know, you won't understand any art, you know. So you know, that's kind of a universal truth that can be applied to this holiday special as well. And so, yeah, you know, having the knowing that at the time there was stuff like this all over TV all the time, it wouldn't necessarily have stood out that much as, you know, this major disaster or whatever. And it was, I think, years later, obviously, that its reputation kind of grew and it became this thing. And you know, kind of as you'd mentioned before, too, like, so much of this stuff just kind of disappeared from everybody's memory, and people don't watch it anymore, or like, have a reason to look back at it the way they do, because this is connected to Star Wars. So, yeah. What do you think? I just kind of have maybe like one more note here, Ryan, one or two more notes. Patton Oswalt makes a point towards the end of the documentary that he doesn't think that Disney Plus should release this holiday special. He doesn't think they should put it up on the service. He said basically because the bootleg component of it, the underground, have to seek it out, maybe get somebody to send you a tape or whatever. I mean, not so much anymore, but you know what I mean? That component of it gives it a little more like mystique. And like, once you put it up on Disney Plus, or even, you know, sell an official Blu-ray of it or whatever, I think it does kind of lose something in terms of being like a little more out of the way kind of Star Wars, you know, sort of thing, you know? It's like Revenge of the Jedi. Like, I remember when I first saw Revenge of the Jedi stuff at Celebration in 99, I was like, what? Like, there's like posters and stuff with this title on it. Like, this is crazy. And, you know, I have a Revenge of the Jedi shirt that our friend Ian was nice enough to pick up for me at Celebration Europe this year. And I love the shirt. But at the same time, it's like, Revenge of the Jedi doesn't really have the mystique that it used to have, because it's just like, it's so like, they bring it up all the time. They produce stuff with it on there all the time. They have legitimized it by making it like part of their official product offerings, you know? And I think doing that, I think that that's kind of the point Patton Oswalt was making, that doing that with this holiday special, you know, might take a little bit of the fun out of it. What do you think about that?
Yeah. I mean, I think it doesn't need to be on Disney Plus, and I think it would involve so much of an explanation like from Disney, and you would have to have like one of those like title cards that they, you know, put up in front of like Peter Pan that's like, this shit's racist, like just so you know. But it's like, yeah, they'd have to have some kind of like disclaimer to it. And I think like, and most people are not going to enjoy it. Like, if you haven't seen it at this point, like, if you haven't already sought this out, like, you're not going to enjoy it.
No.
And I think like it's very readily available on YouTube, which, you know, is You know, and it may not always be. So I guess there is like a, you know, I guess there is a case from like the preservation era, you know, that maybe it should be, you know, properly released on physical media because like there's only these like a handful of these like crappy copies of VHS tapes around, and like those are not going to exist someday, and Disney could put up cease and desist orders and get it taken off YouTube, and you know, it would greatly decrease its availability over time. But I don't know, you know, I don't know. Like, I don't ever want to like gatekeep something like this, but at the same time, it's like if it's lost, it's lost.
Like, well, I don't think there's much danger of anything Star Wars really being lost. You know what I mean? There's so many people holding on to so much of this stuff that like I don't think it's going to be lost. It might not be quite as easy to track down, but it'll be there. I mean, in fact, there's a really nice 4K restored kind of version of it, you know, and it's like the quote unquote original cuts of the original trilogy. You know what I mean? Like, you can get them. It's not like they're you know, and they're I won't say they'll never release them legitimately again, but they're certainly don't seem to have any plans to do that anytime soon. But you know, you want a tow, I can get you a tow by this afternoon. You know what I mean? Like, it's not hard to track them down. You know what I mean? So, yeah. And I just think like with Star Wars being so huge, I guess maybe 150 years from now, perhaps it could have disappeared, but I don't think so. I think it'll be preserved regardless. So that's not too much of an issue, but
you know, and when we're talking about, you know, I don't know, maybe like it's hard for me to be dismissive of the holiday special after watching this documentary, because again, like, I don't think the holiday special on its own is like a great artistic achievement or anything like super important to media history or anything, but it is like, again, in like the context of the time, it really does tell a lot about what entertainment, televised entertainment, was in the late 70s.
Yeah.
And I think that it that part of it is actually important, and also like Star Wars, you know, A New Hope's just strange place in, you know, this new era of blockbuster film that it ushered in. And I do think like the Star Wars part of it is less important than the like media landscape of the time part of it, I think. So in that sense, like, yeah, it probably is something worth like making sure it's preserved for like that reason, but you also really need the context. So like, I think if you know, if Lucasfilm was ever to do like a, you know, 4K Blu-ray release of it, like I think you kind of need like this documentary like packed in to it.
Yeah, that's interesting, because like honestly, I've been thinking about it, and I'm probably a lot more likely to reach for this documentary if I want to like kind of experience the holiday special than I am to like reach for the holiday special itself. Like, I think in 2023, it's more fun to watch this documentary for sure than it is to watch the actual holiday special.
You're going to get more out of it.
Yeah.
Too.
Like, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, cool. So we both definitely both recommend it, right? I mean, for interested parties, it's a fun documentary, and I think a lot of value there. you know, last thing I want to shout out, Ryan, or mention before we wrap up our discussion of this documentary, is that Dan Didier of The Promise Ring and Maritime, you know, Promise Ring, a Milwaukee band. Ryan, we're both from Northern Illinois. I'm sure, you know, like we were growing up at a time when The Promise Ring was a huge band for you know, us and people who like music like mm-hmm. we do. And so, yeah, pretty cool to be watching the credits on this documentary and see his name, Dan Didier's name, pop up. He was the post-production supervisor, and he had a couple other credits in there as well. So that was pretty sweet.
Yeah. Another personal connection here is part of the documentary. One of the interview segments was shot at the Scum and Villainy Cantina in Los Angeles, which is a place I've been to, and that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I've never been there yet. I'll have to check that out. California Chris, of course, has been there numerous times. My little brother goes there pretty often, I think, because he lives out in LA, so that's cool. I don't know, but yeah, I gotta get out there. I gotta get out to the Scum and Villainy Cantina for sure.
Cool.
Yeah. So. Okay.
Okay. So, like, as we're kind of wrapping up this conversation, I wanted to get your take on, like, I think, I don't know. We're of two minds about whether the actual holiday special should be re-released, and that's either going to happen or it's not. But do you think they should do another Star Wars holiday special?
Yeah.
Like Lucasfilm.
I would love that. I liked the Lego Star Wars holiday special. But yeah, I would like that. Now I will say this though. I'm missing some context I need, or at least an example. Because I haven't watched the Guardians of the Galaxy holiday special. But I heard that was pretty successful, right? It was pretty good.
Yeah, and actually, my friend Mike worked on that, and I'm embarrassed to say I have not actually watched it.
Oh, you haven't seen it either. Okay, gotcha, mm-hmm. gotcha.
Yeah, but did work on that.
No, I would love another Star Wars holiday special. I'm not sure how they would approach it. Like, I would love to see, like, Daisy Ridley and Oscar Isaac and, you know, John Boyega and those people, like, doing a holiday special, especially if it was, like, interstitial segments with those characters, and then they cut to, like, different, you know, variety, quote-unquote, segments. I don't think it needs, you know, dancing musical numbers and stuff like that, but I could totally see a fun and lighthearted holiday special, but not quite so over the top and ridiculous and goofy. Okay, not nearly as over the top and ridiculous and goofy, but still have like a playful spirit and not be like super embarrassing to Star Wars and the characters and stuff like that, you know? And they certainly have done like canon adjacent, you know, things with Lego and you know, stuff like that. So yeah, I think they totally should. I think it would be really fun. Maybe the moment's passed a little bit right now though, you know, because there's not, I think it would have been great. I don't know, actually. I don't know what it would look like. I was gonna say it would have been great during the sequel trilogy era, but those movies, they took those movies so seriously that it would be hard to imagine them doing that, like in between The Last Jedi and The Rise of Skywalker, like, oh, we're gonna have Daisy Ridley, you know, goofing around on set. I don't know if they would do that, yeah. You know? But I don't know. I think just to just randomly do it without there being like a vital kind of like era in Star. I don't think we're really in like a vital era of Star Wars right now. You know, I don't know. That might be like, maybe that's a bold statement, but in the first year or two of like Disney Plus, like Mandalorian season 1 and 2, maybe that felt kind of vital. But now I feel like we're in a really like, it's a really nice era, you know, of like a lot of great Star Wars TV shows and stuff. But it doesn't feel like it has this major identity to me anyways, like the couple year period where the prequels were coming out, or the couple of years where the sequels were coming out, or you know what I mean? Like kind of ebbs and flows. And yeah, I don't know. I don't know when the right time to do it would be or what the right way to do it would be, but I would love it.
Yeah, I mean, I think even in like the context of the original trilogy, like the only time to do it was in 1978.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't think you could have done a holiday special in 1981. Like, I don't think it would have worked in the same way, like post Empire Strikes Back. It would have felt like really off, I think.
Yeah.
So yeah, it is. You know, it is a matter of timing. Something that this whole thing got me thinking of is what I would love to see happen with Star Wars, like even outside of like the holiday context, is I would love like something Star Wars that is like a really earnest musical, and like not a like, hey, we're singing because it's hilarious kind of
super
thing.
Meta that, like not super meta, yeah,
yeah, like wink wink nudge nudge. But so I think I've probably talked about this on the show and you know among friends as well. I'm a huge fan of the Frozen duology of films. And, you know, I'm not like a super holiday guy, but, you know, around this time of the year, I like to, you know, listen to a little Frozen music, and I've got both of the soundtracks on vinyl, and I was, you know, listening to them the other day, and I was like, and I just watched this documentary, and I was like, it would be cool if there was something like Star Wars like this. And like those films, like people are not singing songs because it's hilarious to start singing a song. Like there's some like goofy musical numbers like Olaf songs and stuff, but generally like the songs are like the powerful part of the film and like the super emotional part of the film. And it like taps into this like really just raw, earnest, you know, thing, like part of, you know, the combination of like storytelling and music. And I would love to see Star Wars do something like that at some point. And I don't know how they would pull it off or who would do it or what the context would be, but I think it is kind of strange that there hasn't really ever been something like that. And, you know, and it's, you know, like TV shows have done this. Like there's like a musical episode of Buffy the Vampire Slayer. There was recently a musical episode of one of the new Star Trek shows. And it is interesting that that's never really happened in Star Wars, especially because music is such a huge part of Star Wars. Maybe not necessarily like vocal themes, but like the other thing that was kind of like feeding into this whole thing with me as well was I just started rewatching Ahsoka, and I watched the first episode, and there's that amazing song when Sabine Wren is on the motorcycle with, you know, the singer from Illuminati Hotties, and it's like, man, it's weird. We don't get like, we just don't get like that kind of like music in Star Wars. And there's been like a lot of experimentation with music. I think, you know, the score for like The Mandalorian was kind of like a game changer, and like, oh, Star Wars music can also be this. And I don't know. I think like the floodgates are starting to open, and I'm wondering if something like that is in the future, because I think it could be like extremely cool.
Yeah. Very interesting idea there, Ryan. I could kind of see it the way you describe it, you know. It's not something I've ever thought about, but maybe. I feel like animated for sure. I could see it working on an animated level for sure. But maybe I just don't have the vision for like the live action, or it just needs to be the right Star Wars project or the right kind of like Star Wars characters for it to work, you know. And I'm sure they're out there, but in a live action setting, you know.
Yeah, like what I picture live action. Okay, I've actually thought about this a ton. So on the live action side of things, like I'm also a big Hamilton fan. I've seen it live, and you know, listened to the soundtrack and everything. And I think like, you know, that style of musical where you are like, you're telling like a sequential story, and I don't know, I feel like something like that, and there's humor for sure, but also it's like, this is like a deadly serious story, and it's also like, it's a musical, but it's also like pretty cool, and like it's music that like, you know, I listen to when I'm driving my car and stuff. So I think like an approach like that could work as well.
Well, I think it'd be really cool if they just straight up did a Star Wars musical, like live theater, musical theater.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That would be cool.
Yeah.
That, I would actually love that. And that, I think, like, because you're stepping into that world and in doing a Star Wars version of it, you know, and I think that makes a lot of sense. And I'm not opposed to trying to work musical, you know, more of a musical theater approach into like a live action, you know, film, TV, Star Wars thing. But that seems like more of a tricky line, you know what I mean, to make that work. Mm-hmm. But to just say, hey, we're going to produce a musical inspired by Star Wars, you know, a Star Wars musical, and have that performed, you know, because that would be, I mean, because it would also be a cool event. That would be something fun to like, you know, to get to, like if they were doing it in New York, like, man, an extended period of time, like I would find a way to get out to New York to go to that. And I feel like that could be a really fun, you know, fun kind of thing. And, you know, if you do it on TV or in a, you know, film version or whatever, man, the level of scrutiny and the level of, I don't know, just the discourse around it, it's going to be its own challenge, you know what I mean, on its own. But if it was like in that world and you know, it just a musical, but you know, Star Wars, I feel like a lot of that would be avoided right from the, you know, from the get-go, right? Because people who don't want to go to a musical, you know, theater, they're not going to, you know, it is what it is, but
$200 for a ticket.
Yeah. You know, but if it's on TV or in a movie theater, then everyone's going to go. And then, you know what I mean? It's, I don't know. I think it's a tougher sell in that regard.
It is. And, I don't know, like, I think making musicals is one of like the ballsiest things you can do in entertainment. And I think it's why so often when, you know, when they are working with like established properties or something, it's like, you know, it's just so much easier to take the, we're just going to make fun of this kind of approach. Like, we're going to sing because it's stupid and it's funny and it sucks and everyone's in on the joke. But like doing like an earnest musical, especially with established properties and for like a broad audience, is like, it's wild. It's so hard. It's so hard to pull off. And that's why, you know, there isn't a lot of it out there. So
yeah.
And it's also such an acquired taste too. Like it is not for everyone. But it's, I don't know. I think if the right people were involved and they just like really leaned into it and were really thoughtful about it and the idea was like really good, I think it would be awesome.
Yeah. 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 Okay. Well, those listening, you know, if you guys have any thoughts on Star Wars musicals or if you are into Ryan's idea here, we'd love to hear your thoughts on that. I'm curious what others would think about that or what kind of interest there is from the larger Star Wars community in a Star Wars musical. So, yeah. And Ryan, you mentioned that you're rewatching Ahsoka. I really need, like, I've been wanting to rewatch Ahsoka. I feel like my first time watching the show, I didn't really give it the level of attention that I should have, that it deserved. I was like too distracted and too tired and just, I didn't watch it the way I should have watched it. Part of it too is because we weren't doing the podcast. Right. And so like when we're doing the podcast, I'm watching the show, the episodes multiple times and trying to get ready for doing a recording. And I didn't have that either. So, I need incentives, not the right word. Cause I'm incentivized. I want to watch it, but I feel like I need like some pressure to rewatch Ahsoka. Yeah. So if you're rewatching it, we're back to recording, somewhat regularly, then I think I'm gonna, you know, make that my motivation and try to rewatch the Ahsoka series here. So maybe we can do an episode, about the show overall soon coming up. How's that sound?
That sounds great. Like I, you know, now that I'm on winter break, it's been a pretty wild year for me. Like we did talk about like how we were off the podcast due to the strike and everything, but also it has been kind of a relief for me because it has been one of the busiest and most challenging years in recent memory for me. Mostly just because of like my job and work stuff. Yeah, like it was kind of the first thing I did when I just like got on break. I was like, I feel like, you know, revisiting the show. Cause again, like when I was watching it, like I was stressed and tired and, didn't have like a lot of capacity to like engage in conversations or anything about the show, but I really liked it, and surprisingly so. And then going back and like starting my rewatch now, it's like even better. It really does, like the best way I can describe like how the show makes me feel is like, to me, it doesn't, like, I know it is, like, technically a sequel to Rebels, but to me, the show feels like watching the prequels. Like, everything, like, good and bad about the prequels is in this show. And, I don't know, it really, like, takes me back to that era, weirdly enough. And so, yeah, I've been, you know, I started my rewatch, and I also started rereading the original Timothy Zahn trilogy. I started Heir to the Empire to kind of see how the show sort of lines up with those books. And yeah, there's a lot of similarities, a lot that was, you know, in the show that was inspired by those books. So yeah, it's been a really enjoyable kind of experience for sure.
Cool. Okay, well we'll plan on doing an episode related to Ahsoka here sometime soon. How much longer are you on break for, Ryan? How big of a break do you get?
Until January 2nd is when I get back.
Okay. All right, nice, cool. I'm not on break yet. I'm going to start break on Saturday, I guess. So, But I'll be on break until January 8th as a result of the late start. So that'll be nice. Yep. But all right. Well, maybe we'll wrap the show up here, Ryan. But we have a plan for another episode, so that's good. And then we'll see where where the galaxy far, far away takes us after that. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
So. All right. So thank you very much for listening. And, especially if you're hearing this, that means you stayed subscribed to the show or you're following us in some capacity to know this is even here. So, yeah, thanks for listening. And hopefully we'll be putting out episodes a little more frequently here, in 2024. Until then, if you want to reach out to the show, you can email us at, blockaderunnerpodcast@gmail.com. You can follow the show on Blue Sky and Instagram, Blockade Runner Podcast. You'll find us. We also have a Discord you can join, if you want to pop in there and, talk to a few of us who are, involved in the show and friends as a result of the show. So that's pretty cool and pretty fun. And a good place to talk about Star Wars, hopefully. In the new year, when things kick back into gear, we'll see. We're around. We'd love to hear from you. Ryan, you're on Blue Sky.
All over Blue Sky.
Yeah.
Standard Definition Gaming. Via Malay is my personal account on there. And then Red Ring of Light. Life is another account that I run on Blue Sky. So all over there.
Yeah. You have a new direction in your career, Ryan. You leveled up in terms of your career, but, you also in the last year have become this, visionary, this social media visionary where you keep creating these viral accounts, which really cool, people end up following and you've like managed to pull that off a couple times in a row. So that's pretty cool to see.
Yeah. Yeah. I do like, posting and talking about things that I like. It is a great escape and a great way to connect with people. And
right on. All right. So thanks for listening. We'll be back soon with another episode of the Blockade Runner Podcast.
Just one more round, friend. Then homeward bound, friend. Don't forget me in your dreams. Just one more song, friend. And then so long, friend. The nights get shorter, it seems. Just one more rhyme, friend. Yes, it's a crime, friend. But you know time, friend. Time can fly. So it's good night, friend. Good night, but not goodbye.